I want to open this this session of the Pacifica National Board meeting. I want to acknowledge that it's starting 20 minutes late. We have another board member who's couldn't be here yesterday, who is seated, Leslie Bradford. Welcome. Would you like a chance to introduce yourself just briefly?
Hi, thank you so much for coming to LA. I hope our listeners are treating you well. I'm Leslie Radford. I'm on the KPFK LSB. I've been on the on and off the LSB since its founding and back to the lab days. Attended over the years probably a dozen of these meetings before, but this is my first time at this table. So thank you all for being in LA. I hope you get a chance to come out and see our fine city, but if you don't, enjoy the weather.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, and I'm sorry, we have two. Sandra Rowline.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you for welcoming me, and I'm happy to be here. I hope that we can set the tone for a very productive and positive meeting. Thank you.
Sandra Rowline's our KPFT, one of our KPFT representatives. Let's see, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. You all have copies of the minutes as they came from the coordinating committee. Are there suggestions for change? Oh, I'm sorry, I said minutes, I meant agenda. Yes. Joe, and then David.
Are we going to take roll or anything?
Oh, yes, we have to do that, don't we? Yes, sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Grace Aaron.
Here.
David Beaton.
Here.
Nia Bediako.
Present.
Carolyn Burden.
Here.
James Brown.
Jim Brown.
Sorry. AC Bird.
Here.
Kathy Davis.
Here.
Sherry Gendelman.
Present.
Luzette King.
Yes.
Effie Nwangaza.
Here.
Sean Casey O'Brien.
Here.
Leslie Redford.
Here.
Sandra Rowline.
Here.
George Reiter.
Here.
James Ross.
Here.
Rico Ross. Wendy Schrell.
Here.
Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Andrea Turner.
Here.
Joseph Wanzala.
Here.
Susan Young.
Here.
Okay. So, are there any suggestions for changes to the agenda? I'd recognize Joe and then David.
Yeah, there's been an appeal to the National Board from some members of the KPFA LSB to address the removal of an LSB member having to do with, I guess what it is, the board has to resolve a question of interpretation of the bylaws in terms of the seating, what happens when a member changes their status from listener to staff. And so I'd like to put that on the agenda maybe after the finance report.
Okay, is there any objection to that? Okay, and how much time do you think it needs?
Half an hour, 30 minutes, maybe 10 minutes.
Okay, we'll put it on for 30 minutes after the finance report. David?
The public had asked to move a public comment period to after the finance report. I was wondering if we could move the public comment till after the finance report so they could comment on it.
Any objection to that?
I think they also wanted to comment after the
microphone.
I'm sorry. There's a request yesterday also to have public comment, the 10:15 public comment, to be shifted to after the report from the general manager.
I'm sorry, I thought that's what David was saying.
No.
No, I was just saying move the public comment so they can maybe comment at the same time, maybe just, or you want to have two public comments. It
doesn't I think matter. We should split the amount of time for public comment in two, have a little bit after the report from the general manager's meeting and a little bit after the finance report. That's what was requested yesterday.
Okay, we have...
What was requested was a vote of comments before any vote and finance committee motions.
Well, that would certainly be after the finance report. We have an hour scheduled, so if we put a half hour after in the morning and a half hour after finance, is that what you're suggesting?
Was there going to be a half hour for the whole day?
Or no, there's an hour altogether.
Okay, yes.
Is there any objection to that? So we'll have a half an hour comment after the general manager's meeting.
Point of information, Chair.
Yeah, who said that?
Yeah. Does that mean that we will defer our decision until we hear from the listeners? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's the intention.
Okay.
Okay. Any other suggestions for change? Grace?
I think that it's vital that we start discussing among members of this board what we're going to be doing in this transition period. So I would suggest that we cut some time from the report from the general's manager's meeting and from the audit report and the finance report so that we have at least an hour and a half to begin discussion about what we're going to do regarding interim management for this organization and strategic planning. So I'd like to shorten the report from the general manager's meeting from an hour and 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes. And the finance report, I'd like to take an hour, shorten the finance report by an hour and then have an hour and a half for a discussion of our options for restructuring this foundation, from that would be from I believe 4:30 to 6:00.
So you're suggesting the finance report be an hour from 3 to 4. Public comment from 3:30 to from 4:30 and a strategic discussion from 4:30 to 6:00. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Leslie.
Just a question here. I'm new to all of this. I was wondering what we're talking about with restructuring. What would this extra hour and a half be for precisely?
Currently, we have no interim ED. Our Pacifica Council resigned yesterday. We have no HR director. We have a situation where this foundation has a lot of empty spaces in upper management. We need to grapple with that, and we need to figure out how we're going to do interim staffing and how we're going to turn this foundation around, either ourselves or with the help of interim management. I think it's an important discussion. We need to start it today after we are updated on the situations facing us.
Is there any other discussion about the suggested change? Jamie.
Is it in order to discuss tomorrow's agenda?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm concerned that we're putting off the election of officers and committees till the middle of tomorrow morning. I could easily see a situation where if things get pushed back, that gets pushed back till right at the end. So I would like to move to put election of officers and election of PNB reps to committees first thing tomorrow morning, and then we can reorganize the rest of the day as people see fit. There's also a closed session, which is now in the 8:30 to 10 a.m. slot. I'd like to put the election of officers and committees in that slot. And then I don't know what people want to do. The closed session could be put later in the morning.
Bonnie?
That seems fine to me. I just want to think if that's where you want to move it, I think it will be fine. I've gotten Michael Lauer to come to count the ballots, and I just want to make sure that it's a time that he can come and be here, and I wanted to make sure that we keep both the election of the officers and the reps to the committees together because we wouldn't be inconveniencing somebody to come back twice. I think the committee elections, did everybody get the sheet? And I just want to remind people to please take time to get together with the other reps from your particular signal area and go through and make a list of who wants to be on each of the committees, because I think we'll find that many of them will be uncontested and that there will just be one person from each signal area that wants to sit on a particular committee, and we probably won't have very many committee elections that we actually have to hold. I emailed it to you a few days ago. I'm sure someone from your signal area has one. You just need to fill out one for the entire group of four people. And there's also, and one for the affiliates.
Point of information, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do we know what the closed session for tomorrow is? It says to be announced. So do we have any idea what that's about?
Well, I presume it's a continuation of the issues raised in the other closed session, but I don't have anything further.
I only asked that to know how critical it is.
Effia, we'll know tonight.
Could we have a hard copy of the committee assignments circulated at this time?
Okay, we'll just have to print back there on those machines and. Okay, I'll try to pull one.
Thank you.
Okay.
Or does somebody have one that can just bump it over onto that machine?
No, but if you email me, I'll put it on a flash drive and get it on.
Excellent.
Okay. Is there any objection to moving the election of offices up to first thing in the morning?
Dependent upon the.
Well, actually, the votes can be counted later if he can't get here in the morning, so I don't think it's really conditional on that. We won't know the answer, but the procedure will be done, and the results will be in the can.
Might there not be, a
change in nominations depending upon...
Actually, there is, you're right.
That's right.
The result of the first election on PNB offices will have an effect on the result of the second. So, can we make this conditional on his being here? If Jamie, is that all right with you? Well, you want to just do it in.
I guess so. I mean,
I think it's going to be okay if it's Sunday.
Okay, so let's tentatively do that, and if we have to reschedule in the morning, we'll do it. Let's see, Carolyn, did you want to say?
I was going to say, perhaps other people, and this may not be totally conditional on Michael's expertise. There are other people who can count the ballots by hand. Michael could verify if that's important.
Yeah.
But so I don't think we need to make that totally conditional on his being here.
Okay.
Yeah, we're a competent and multi-talented group.
Susan?
Just a point of clarification. Do I assume that the interim management discussion will be an executive session?
I think you have to assume that, yes.
Okay.
Certainly to the extent it involves particular people.
I think that we need to have a broad discussion, a generalized discussion about how we want to approach it, and it may include forming committees to do some of those tasks, and all that can be an open session. So it depends on what we're talking about, and we just have to be careful that when we get into particulars that section of it is in closed session. Does that make sense?
I would think there's plenty for us to talk about in the area of strategic planning that could be done in public session. I'm not sure what Grace had in mind, but I think, you know, that would be a valuable discussion for the board. And then we do have closed sessions Saturday night and then Sunday morning where we could deal with the, you know, the personnel type issues in the closed session way. I would like to see some groundwork laid for how we're going to move forward in an open discussion in open session. I don't know how other people feel, but I could see that being valuable.
Such as a response to the general manager's report?
Yeah, something.
For instance.
Yeah.
I guess that one of the things, though, that I feel is it's really clear that we lack critical employed management. And we have a number of options people have thought about. I do not want to lose the opportunity of exploring those specific options, you know, until it's too late. It's much better to discuss these things in an in-person meeting than it is on one of those conference calls.
Well, I hear a lot of agreement about that we're going to have this session, so unless there's some objection to it, yes.
Rather than calling it an open-ended strategy session or whatever, could we talk about it? Could we specify that this is about how we're going to deal with the vacancies in personnel? Would that settle the question,
Grace?
For people?
No, I think that we need to have a broader discussion than that because we need to also discuss as a board how we want to move forward and put the foundation itself in terms of our direction to management on a better financial footing and on a more stable footing in general. So that's a little bit of a different discussion than just staffing. And I think it should be it would come more under the rubric of strategic planning, including interim staffing or however this would be part of the discussion. So I think that in terms of what Susan is saying, that we start addressing specifics in terms of putting in place interim management, that we put that in the executive session later that evening, or if we want to discuss it sooner than that, that we simply start the executive session a little sooner, or we move around the sequence of items in the executive session. The legal update is first and personnel issues second. We might want to shift the order of that.
I'm utterly confused. We've now taken personnel out of this special session. We have time for finance. What are we going to talk about?
I take that as a rhetorical question.
It is, indeed. Someone has an answer.
Chair, I'm very anxious that we don't seem to have heard anything that was said yesterday. I think when we're trying to decide what goes into executive sessions, we should be mindful that we were told yesterday, unless we're talking about a matter of acquisition, and I don't think Pacifica is in any position to be doing that right now, or a matter of personnel, then we do not need to go into executive session. And I would want our listeners here, who sometimes might have even more, would have better ideas about how this station is being run. And I'd like to get their thoughts on it. So we can separate personnel, meaning the person, from the issue, the strategy. So I agree with Grace.
Okay, so unless I hear objection, I'm going to accept this as from 4:30 to 6, we will have a strategic discussion. Okay, any other changes include anything that people think is appropriate for a public meeting? Do we have any other changes?
Point of information.
Yes.
I was trying to print something and I didn't hear when the the KPFA LSB issue was coming up.
That was at what did I say? From 4 to 4:30.
4 to 4:30.
Yeah.
4 to 4:30. So now we have finance in for
An hour.
An hour?
Yes.
For the finances of the network?
Well, that's yes, that's a finance wow. report.
Wow.
Sandra?
You know,
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the amenda the agenda as amended, please.
Is there any objection to accepting the agenda as amended? Hearing none, the agenda is accepted. The next item on the agenda is
you're kidding, right?
The approval of minutes. We've had some technical difficulties in getting minutes to you, Donna. I don't think we have them, do we? No, the minutes from the earlier meeting. Oh, we have it. Yeah, there's some confusion here on my part. I thought we were going to approve minutes from the previous phone meeting, and that's what is it that's actually being circulated, Donna? You didn't circulate them, and
I have to look at my email now.
Okay. The minutes can be accepted at any meeting, and I want to thank Donna for the extraordinary experience of actually having minutes at the next meeting available, even if they're not actually available right now. Thank you very much. And. Yeah, I think we'll just, and we're a little bit short on time, so I think we're going to just pass on that. Yes.
Can we possibly approve the minutes right after the lunch break as the first item?
We could, but we don't. That would be another agenda change. I'd rather not do it. Yes.
I would suggest that. If possible, that we get the minutes today so we can at least see them.
Yes.
That those minutes from that last meeting.
We can approve them at the next phone meeting or whatever.
No, I mean, so we can look at them today.
You want to do them today?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a sense that we want to approve minutes today? Hey.
I can have I don't have everybody's email address yet because it's a different, but I do have them electronically. I could send them by email to somebody who has everybody's email address.
I can send you everybody's email address.
Okay.
Good.
All
right. Okay. Now, will we get a paper copy today? Was that what you were requesting, Jim?
Yeah. Do you want that? That's even easier.
That's easier. Okay. So let's do that.
You can find somebody who can make the copies.
We'll get it sometime during the day, and we'll try to put it in sometime today or tomorrow if necessary. We're 15 minutes over time. I'd like to give the archives and the affiliates the half an hour that they were promised for a report. So what I'd like to do is to take 5 minutes out of our break at 10 a.m. and make that a 10-minute break and take 10 minutes
Exactly.
Put our dinner time back 10 minutes, so we start at 6:10 instead of 6. Is that?
No. Oh, yeah. Just...
Okay.
Wait a second. No. I object. I object to that. An hour is even a little, because we have to go out and eat.
Unless we come back at 7:10 instead of 6:10. Basically, we're taking it out of our time rather than the time of the people who are we've asked to come here and speak.
Okay.
Well.
Let's begin then, Brian. Brian DeShazer with the Pacifica Archives report, and you have a half an hour, Brian.
So I have something to pass out here so we can follow along. I guess we'll just give it one and pass it around.
So John is working on a little technical thing so we can listen to a little bit of sound so we can talk about the campus campaign and talk about the activities of the archives in Medewing so you can sort of get the point of all of our work in the archives. Good morning. I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. And, you know, in these harsh times, it's very turbulent in Pacifica and turbulent in the world. Economy is crashing. Pacifica's finances are tumbling, and the governance is tumbling, the management is tumbling, and the archive is still there. We're not immune to this. You know, when I first came to the archives 10 years ago, I was told, we know about death, we know about taxes, and we know about the archives in terms of finances. What's secure, what the legacy is, and what we owe, what our obligation is to this organization is the protection of this archive. And that's what I feel my role has been since I've been here, and I feel that that still is my role, is to protect those archives. So while the Pacifica Network is struggling through protecting the licenses of the stations, it's also my role to include you in the discussion of how to protect these archives. I appreciate Sherry Gendelman and Bonnie Simmons for really helping bring the archives to the center of the discussion while everything else is sort of going into chaos. So I really appreciate Bonnie and Sherry for discussing the activities of the archives from the archives world as we talk to our archives professionals about what to do with a collection when an organization is having financial crises. Are we anywhere near the audio, John? Okay. I can actually open up to questions anytime. We're going to make this a little bit of a dialogue. I'm not going to lecture and then wait for the end. So if you have a question or anything, please raise your hand and we'll just talk. You know, I think, you know, in terms of the archives budget, you know, in the past since 2003, the operating expenses for the archives budget was an average of $550,000. Last year we had $641,000, which we had to bring in a lot of people and pay for a lot of consultants to adhere to the standards of the grant that we were obligated to work through from the Grammy Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. This year our budget is $456,000. That means somewhere $150,000 is not longer on our table. It's no longer for us to work with. We can't get a development person. We can't get a web person. We can't really do the work that is necessary to do the activities of the preservation work, much less the services to the station. So now does everybody have the little, this thing?
Yes.
All right, so when we get to the audio, we'll get to the audio. Huh? There's called Mumford Final Mixes. And really, like in terms of the past 10 years of working on 9 major grants to fund preservation and access from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, National Endowment for the Arts, projects with the University of California, Berkeley, Moffitt Library, new collaborations with New York University, Tisch School of the Arts, etc. Anything going on with the... Not yet. So when we get past the audio, we'll talk about what really the activities of the archives are. And one is in preservation and access. Number 2 is services to the stations, program services. And 3rd is administration. We're doing far too much in program services. All of our energies and monies are being put into program services, and not enough is in preservation and access. Not enough is in preservation and access. That's why we've had to go to the grant funders to get the money and the support. But we've hit our threshold. We've totally hit our threshold. If somebody gave me another $40,000, I wouldn't be able to do the work that the grant requires. We've hit our threshold. So what's the answer? I went to our professional archivists at the Society of American Archivists, University of Maryland Public Radio Archives, New York University, the people that understand this paradigm of archives and collections. And what they recommend. I think anyone actually that says Mumford.
It is, isn't it?
Okay. standing by still. Any questions so far? No?
Yeah, Afia?
You were saying you
take the questions.
Right, okay.
Another $40,000, you couldn't, and then they started saying they were ready, and you cut yourself off. So would you finish what you were about to say?
Right. When I'm talking about the threshold, in other words, there's not enough staff. If a grant requires that I do digitization of tape, a cataloging description, a little copyright research, there's actually no staff to do that work. I mean, if you came to the archives last night, you saw all the boxes over in one corner and all the tapes in the refrigerator. They're actually, you met the entire archive staff last night. There's only five of us. You met all of them. We have volunteers, but not with the skills that it requires to adhere to the standards of the grant. We need a professional cataloger. We need a professional person that works with that kind of level of description. And that's what the grant requires. Even in-house transfer of tape, we can't do it to the level of the grant. We have to send it to Philadelphia to have it in a house where they actually do have rooms with one recorder and one person to listen to every second of that transfer. So we've hit our threshold. That's what the point is. So really the answer to that, I think that's where I got cut off, the answer to that is in collaborations and partnerships with institutions and organizations that have the infrastructure and the staffing to work with that level. So a university is a really good clue. Schools of library sciences have interns that need to do the work with this kind of collection to even get through their schooling. So we're working that out. And in the report, we talk about our discussions with George Washington University in Georgetown, Washington, D.C., WPFW, New York University in New York City, and University of Texas in Austin at KPFT. So there really is a lot of discussion and dialogue between the professionals, and the word's gotten out that the Pacifica Archives needs help from the archives world to save the collection. Still no clue with that audio. Yes, hi, Susan.
Yeah, a couple of questions. First, I'm not sure that I understand the lingo. What are program services?
Okay, so on little page 3 of your little slide there, you'll see in program service, that really is customer service. There's an 800 number that listeners can call to ask about a program. It was mostly Democracy Now! At one time. Now it's From the Vault. Now it's Sonalico Hot Cars Uprising. Now it's Michio Kaku's Explorations. It's the first 100 days of Obama. That's a new program that has the 800 number. It's a premium creation. How do we make a premium Black History Month Malcolm X 6-CD set, Angela Davis CD? Who thinks about that? The archive staff thinks about what's in the collection to combine and create a product for the stations to use for premium development. Development itself. How do we get the money to fund that kind of work? Label design, production, duplication of the orders from the product. We do the production, we do the duplication, we do the replication, we do the label design, the labeling, the printing, the shipping, the packing. That one room that you saw back there is the preservation house, the shipping and packing department, the design house. It's all done in that little room.
Let me ask you one other question.
Mm-hmm.
What the grants that we receive, are there two, NEA and Grammy Foundation?
We finished the National Endowment for the Arts 4th grant about 6 months ago. It bumped into NEA number 5, which was just announced this month. So we just received a 5th grant from the National Endowment for the
Arts.
Which
is how much?
Which is $15,000. Okay. The project is $65,000. So we have to match it. We matched it with the last fund drive that we had in November.
Okay.
So we booked the match for that. The Grammy Foundation was a 2-year project, which overlapped the NEA. So mm-hmm. we're on multiple grants at the same time.
And counts as match? Counts as part of the match?
No.
No.
No. It didn't happen. When you apply, mm-hmm. if the grant is already in-house or if it's in the works, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Now audio?
But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in history in a position actually.
Yeah.
The
right, so look at this.
Said that if I refused to leave the seat, he would have to call the police, and I told him, just call the police, which he did, and when they came, they placed me under arrest.
Hi, my name is Ashana Shatara. I attend Mumford High School, and I am in the Rosa Parks group.
Wasn't that a pretty frightening thing to be arrested in Montgomery, Alabama?
No, I wasn't frightened at all.
You weren't frightened? Why weren't you frightened?
I don't know why I wasn't, but I didn't feel afraid. I had decided that I would have to know once and for all what rights I had as a human being and a citizen, even in Montgomery, Alabama.
The song I chose for this was Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and I chose this song because she had to overcome obstacles, and when you look back on it, you would never think that our world was like that, because today we have so many options and so many opportunities. But to hear her and to hear what she's experienced, it's crazy.
All right. Thank you. All right, so what that was the example of what we're doing with the campus campaign. In November, we had to go back on the air on Pacifica Airways for our sixth annual one-day fund drive to supplement our budget because funds weren't available even in 1999 when there was a $5 million debt. There was no money to fund the archives. So that's when the idea came, all right, go ahead and go on the air for one day, simultaneously, all stations, and do what you can. This year, we still saw that it wasn't enough to just say, here's a gift, give me some money. Here's a gift, give me some money. It wasn't enough. And because of the 6 years of grant work, we've actually accumulated a body of work that we've actually worked with in From the Vault. Every week, we listen. We do research, we think about things, and we think about how it connects with the education system. Professor Lamont Yeakey, who's on the LSB at KPFK, saw that and actually selected 20 episodes of From the Vault for his civil rights history class and 20 episodes for his U.S. history, U.S. survey class. Those two CDs are required listening in his class. In each quarter, the archive staff representatives go to the classroom, introduce them to the audio, introduce them to the website, show them how to use the tool as a research tool. And then Lamont gets them to buy the CD and give us $20 right there at the door. It's required listening just like it is a textbook. So we make about $1,500 every six, about $3,000 a year from his one class. So the obvious idea was, how can I replicate that across the country? How can I see, when I saw the students, it's been going on for 2 years. We actually get feedback from students that you still, to this day, use that tool in their classes and graduate programs. So how can I duplicate that? So the campus campaign was the deal. And I wanted the listeners to have the first opportunity to say, which schools do we go to? Because it's guerrilla time. It's, you know, grassroots time. There is no education funding that's going to give me money to do this. Not at least with another years of research, another grant writer, and a lot of obligations that we can't commit to. So we said, listeners, you choose. Those listeners sponsored over 700 schools and nonprofits, churches, elementary schools, high schools, colleges, community colleges, charter schools across the nation, in every state in the nation. And as we stand and meet in the Feminist Majority Building, we pitched, we have a CD of 10 episodes in the women's studies, Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, Jermaine Greer, and we pitched that package should be in the library in Wasala High School in Wasala, Alaska, where Sarah Palin got her education. It turns out that somebody did match it, and we are sending a copy of the feminist recordings to the high school where Sarah Palin got her education. And that's the point. That's the payoff. And what you heard in that young 16-year-old girl in Detroit, Michigan, in Mumford High School, understand personally, personalizing the history of Rosa Parks. So the campus campaign package is 90 episodes going to a library of a school. We're making that connection. We have 700 new names. We have 700 new schools, 700 new teachers that we can connect with. We opened a new blog site called intheschools.org. It's a blog site where each of those education packages are there for students and teachers to give us feedback, tell us how you use it. So what you heard in the Rosa Parks clip is the lesson plan that we developed for the teachers at the schools. And Mumford High School was the school that tested it out. And what you heard was they listened to the 30-second clip alone. And then the student was given the activity to choose a song of their own, choose a song of their selection to match the tone, the mood, the message, what that clip meant to them personally. And when we asked the teacher and the principal of the high school, what does that mean to them in their education? They fell out because it personalizes history in a way that cannot happen in a paragraph in a book. If the civil rights movement is truncated and compressed into a 2-page description in a book, that's not enough. And we know that these recorded, these sounds, the voices of these people really do come alive. And personalizing that with those young people in Mumford High School, that's the point, and that's the payoff of 10 years of me being in those archives. So now we get to the point of, like, how do we get this archives thing to work? So there's a little flow chart here of how does the money go from the listener to the foundation to the archives. And obviously we have a crisis. We have a crisis at stations that can't pay their central services or are starting to pay central services and repair that. But what happened was the budget of the archive didn't get sent their percentage of the central services from two stations, which is where that $150,000 in a year got cut from our budget. We laid off a person too. I think there's my little stick figure page. Is it in there? A little stick figure page. You met all the archive staff. The other four or five people are people that we desperately need to continue the activities. I mean, I'm not stupid. I know that's not going to happen tomorrow. We're not going to hire 5 people for the archives in this organization. So we must go into collaborations and partnerships. And it's working. We're working with George Washington University to collaborate on a grant for the National Endowment for the Humanities. The National Endowment for the Humanities gives money like $250,000, not just $15,000 that we're working on with the National Endowment for the Arts. This is the bridge that we've been working towards. The body of work has proved itself. The activities and the accessibility of the collection has proven itself. And now it's time for you to support the archives and myself in taking this archive to the table of an organization that can help us get the NEH grant and get all those tapes in that room onto CDs. And then we can make it accessible to schools. Then we can engage a new generation across the country into what Pacifica means. Yes?
Yes.
All right. And where we are, where we're going, partnerships. I think that's kind of all I had to say for the moment. We're working really hard in the archives. I thank Addie Gevins, who's our preservation and access coordinator, who's been my mentor. She's donating her time trying to work with University of Texas in Austin, New York University, Stanford University. We have a group of advisors, professionals, that give up their time and effort to come on conference calls with us to discuss what are the possibilities, what are our options. The options are not within this organization. You know that, right? We can't do another 4 days of fundraising on the stations to get a little bit more money for the archives when a lot of people are hurting. All the stations are hurting. Our staff is hurting. We feel it. We feel it too. So I appreciate your time, and we'll go ahead and take some questions.
Brian, thank
you. I'm sorry. I was going to make one myself. I didn't see you, Jim. Go ahead.
That's all right. Brian, thank you very much for that report. One question I have is, are you in a position to, for instance, if a station has a program that it needs multiple copies of, rather than spending that money elsewhere, could they spend it with you and could you deliver it?
Yes, and actually that's what the archives is sort of about. The archives was created as the distribution center for Pacifica before there was a digital era. Tapes were duplicated on reel-to-reel and shipped to New York because KPFA had a tape they wanted to play. That's why there's a collection. because for replay, the Archives Program Services was to gather the materials from the stations and then duplicate it and make it available to the other stations. And now, with the digital era, including the affiliates, with AudioPort, that was the great divide that we had, too. AudioPort was the answer to our problem in getting material accessible to the affiliates.
Brian, just let me interrupt for a moment. They're issuing parking tickets out front.
Oh, holy moly.
I hope you don't have to leave.
No. I biked it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. So are people breaking to go take care of their cars? What?
No one seemed to dash for the door. I think we're all right.
Okay.
Just to tell everyone, there are 30 spots in the lot. The feminist majority has a lot in the back behind the building up those stairs that has 30 or 35 parking spots that we can use.
Luzette?
Thank you very much, Brian. I didn't quite understand what the archives in Pacifica was about, but I have to say I put my name down to be a member and change it, and now I want to do it. Jim is taking that spot. Nonetheless, Pacifica as an idea, Pacifica Radio, 60 years this year. Have you any plans for that, number one? Number two, do you have any connection with the University of the District of Columbia, a very good university, and Howard University? Do you have any connections with them?
Actually, Howard University back in 2005 was the first university that we sort of connected with and donated recordings to their history department. And we met with every professor of history in Howard University at a table, really engaging with them about the recordings. Mm-hmm. What we haven't really been able to do is to follow up with them in terms of that sort of that one direction.
Right.
But I sure would like to.
UDC?
I'm sorry?
University of UDC?
No, it doesn't ring a bell. So
I will try and get some connections for you.
Good, thank you.
The 60th year?
Oh, the 60th year. Yes, we're working with both KPFA and KPFK right now. The KPFK's 50th anniversary is coming up. KPFA, locally, their 60th anniversary. So we've been working with the program directors on creating 60 voices for 60 years for premium for the fund drive, as well as we have 200 two-minute PSAs that sort of celebrate Pacifica's anniversary from everything that we could find. Mm-hmm. That was done for the 50th anniversary 10 years ago, but because of what happened, those were actually never used. So we have PSAs, we have important programs for rebroadcast, and we've also working with the local stations to sort of devise 50 voices, 50 years for K, 60 voices, 60 years for A.
Good. Jim, and then a few. Excellent. I'm sorry.
And we're working with BAI too, right?
Rico.
Which I have something to say about. Don't let me forget all the apps.
Thank you. I'd like to apologize for being late. I had a terrible headache after I left last night. And I remember talking to Dave Edelson, and he said when he used to chair, he would go home with a headache. And I chaired for a year and never had a headache, but yesterday did it for me. But in any event, I have talked to I'm particularly disappointed that I missed all of Brian's report, because I talked to him yesterday twice about this, about the work he was doing, and I was just so very impressed with it. I also think that maybe he doesn't realize the domino effect that his program could have in the future with kids. When I was in high school, I refused to take history classes because I felt that they weren't inclusive. And I've spoken to students in South Central where they're in some of those schools, they have a 75% dropout rate. And one of the things that they complained about is that they felt they had no ownership and that there was nothing that attracted them. All of the programs that made the school interesting were cut. And I think your program is so very important, especially now. And I told those kids that the system has a default system for those of you who drop out, and it's called prison, and it's waiting for you. Mm-hmm. So you've got a choice to make. And I think this program is going to make school interesting, and not just for black people. Mm-hmm. It's going to bring understanding, because I talked to Brian yesterday, and he was talking about taking it down south and bringing it to white kids, too. And that's the type of understanding that's going to deal with this issue of racism that we have in our country that I think is our Achilles heel. So I thank you, and I hope the board supports it.
Thank you. In terms of the campus campaign, really is just the first step It really is. Even when we came up with the idea and saw the future in it, we knew that all we need is a little bit more support to sort of create the program, the campus campaign, and really connect with those schools. Those 700 librarians, I'm already talking to them, I'm already emailing. We're getting emails from teachers at schools that saw their name on the list on our website and said, when am I going to get my materials? I want to be able to use them. We got emails and calls from North Carolina who asked for somebody to sponsor her school. She didn't have enough money, and she went to their school to find out if they could donate to the archives to get the copy. Schools can't donate to nonprofits. So she has to work with the PTA to get the parents to come up with a pool of $200 to get two copies of that campus campaign. So there's a lot of creativity that we can work with on the local level within the community at the station, or in the community at the school. And that's where the affiliate comes in. And we've talked to, I hope we'll be working with Ursula on how we can sort of expand this into the affiliate market. Every state in the nation was sponsored, a school in every state of the nation. So if we find the affiliate, then we can use the affiliates to sort of use the campus campaign to help fund the affiliate station as well as the school and create a new community. It's all win-win. It's all, win-win. All right, so there's one more thing that I actually wanted to announce in terms of the partnerships. That's the only answer. Partnerships, collaborations, that's it. And a little fundraising, sure. Internet Archive in San Francisco has donated their services to digitize and make available every single folio program guide since the beginning of this organization in 1949. They've already started, and we completed all of KPFK in Los Angeles' history from 1959 until the last one that was produced. It's been digitized page by page, multiple formats. You can go online right now, those of you that are on your laptops, to archive.org and search folios or search Pacifica Radio Archives. Not only have we done KPFK, we just started and are about to finish WBAI's entire history, page by page, day by day, hour by hour, what was on the air. All right, so if you haven't figured this out, this is an incredible tool to how to tell the story of the development of public radio in the United States. When we squish all that data in to one document, then I can hit the word Find Ginsburg, and I will hit every single time, every single hour that Allen Ginsburg was on the air at Pacifica. Then we can see it started with classical music and white commentary. Then it grew into more stations. Then it sort of grew into more African-American history. Then it grew into the events of the country that was happening. Then it grew into this diversity issue. How can we bring in voices? How we create the pool of what Pacifica is now? Women's department, the gay and lesbian department, third world department was created at Pacifica. Pacifica was the trailblazer in public media in this country. And this project, this folio project, is the tool that will be able to graph that and tell the story about what Pacifica's significance in this country to what it does to social justice and peace and all of that. What really has it served? What is its significance? That can tell the answer. But what is it going to need? That collaboration. So, you know, in all these grants, the NEA grant, the Grammy grant, 6 years, I'd say maybe $15,000 to $20,000 was used to digitize, to do that project in-house. We got 12 folios digitized with $20,000. This organization has donated the services and has already done 783 folios. That's collaboration. That's partnership. And I'd like to thank Brewster Kahle and the Internet Archive for that donation. And one more question.
We're Leslie, you're next, and we're really out of time. So, I'm sorry, Afia. You're next, Afia. Sorry.
And along that same line, where are you in terms of percentages in digitizing or forming partnerships with the content itself? As I understand it, there was a question about doing it with Google and that whether or not right. that was working, and then some other schools. So would you talk about that momentarily?
Right. Let's say Google, Yahoo, when they went into content development, when like YouTube and that sort of movement started, they were gathering content. What Google wanted was content from everywhere to sort of fill in their project. So they did come to the archives. Archives is cool. That would be great to have Malcolm X speeches up on their website for Google. But what could not be indemnified was the copyright. We do not know what's in that archive, what is owned by Pacifica, what isn't owned, what licenses were created, what licenses. It's a nightmare. Nobody wants to take on that disaster. Google didn't. That's when they walked. And they're like, no, we don't, no copyright. Okay,
so the, where is it at this point?
Where it is at this point is that we're speaking with the universities and the organizations that have the infrastructure to take care of that. Another, the Grammy Foundation grant right now has a little bit of money to do a little bit of copyright research on a few selected tapes that we want to be able to use to use for promotion and premium development. The next stage is that if we partner with a university that has that infrastructure, then we can take care of a lot more copyright research so that the collection can be more accessible.
Leslie, you'll be the last to question. And Brian, will you be around during the day for people who want to talk to you more?
Yeah.
Great.
Yes, Brian, thank you so much for the important work you do. I think we all forget about the archives, and in fact, you know, as an educator myself, I can say quite honestly this may be some of the most important work Pacifica does. One thing I wanted to ask you is whether you've hooked up with the community colleges.
Yeah.
And where you stand with that. And my other question is, what do you need out of the Archives Committee? What kind of support do you need from this body's committee for your work?
Well, step one is to meet, to show up. And I swear to God, I'm not kidding. You know, the Archives Committee was demoted to an Archives Task Force because people didn't show up and you never met quorum. Even now, there has not been a single meeting when more than four people have shown up. Bonnie Simmons has been the chair and has been desperately trying to get the committee members to show up. I'm not even going to discuss what I need from them until you show up. So that, you know, yeah, show up. Come on the Archives Committee. Talk about it. And basically, you're going to have to do homework. Don't come on and give me your opinion and your idea without understanding what we have to do. Understand that there is a science to it. There's schools of sciences about it. It's not play. I hold the archives is held to the highest standard that this country puts forth through the Library of Congress, the Grammy Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities. This is a humanities game, the archives. It's not a radio game. So show up, do your homework, and I'm going to be strict.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.
Ursula? Next will be the affiliates report by Ursula Rudenberg, our affiliates director.